Now for the main message, Mr. Buchanan.
Hello to my daughter, Lindsay, and Haley, Jared. I think they're watching, so been asked to say hi. Hi. Get ready for good news. Aren't you ready for some good news? I believe you are. And as church members, you should be ready for some good news. And actually, I think most people around the world are ready for some good news. They just don't know it yet. And you do. Have you noticed how sometimes even good things, when they're reported in the news, are framed in a negative light? Have you noticed that? For instance, here's a story from a number of years ago. It says, U.S. industrial manufacturers expect lower growth rates for the next 12 months. That's the headline. Read that again. U.S. industrial manufacturers expect lower growth rates for the next 12 months. That's bad. That doesn't sound good, does it? It sounds like things are going downhill, and it's not good. But when you look at the rest of the story, this may have been buried about 12 paragraphs deep, the actual text of the press release that they got from an institution that tracks all that information is that U.S. industrial manufacturers expect growth rate of 5.7% for the next 12 months. It's going up, it's not going down. But because somebody who is an expert on the matter expected or forecast a 12% increase, then the expectations are lower. But the rate was going up. So much of the news is framed that way. So much of good news is framed that way, but you have a difficult time finding it. I mentioned my little survey of my online newspaper, the Daily Star of Tucson, which is a very liberal newspaper. They hate the president. They hate it. And they write their own headlines. They write their own headlines. So even good news has a bad headline. Most of the time, 90 to 95% over a month's time, I found. Even if it's neutral. So it seems as though, and this is not going to be news to you, most stories that gain attention have a negative slant. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, this is nothing that is new. This is something that has always been that way. What you watch in the news, it's gotten worse, I believe. Especially in the last 4 years, I think it's gotten worse and worse. And I think I don't have the studies to back it up. I could find them from Brent Bozell. I could find them from sources like that. But I believe that it has gotten worse and worse. And we've heard the reason that negative news sells. Negative news sells. And it's true. And I've often wondered about that and found that from a psychological standpoint, even removing the last 4 years and all the other negativity that's gone on politically speaking, that there is a predisposition in human nature that actually is alerted to bad news more so than good news. Now, let me interrupt myself and say that there is a phenomenon associated with some of the social media where individuals report good news. Now, I'm not really big on social media. I really stay away from Facebook, even though I have an account. I have a Twitter account just for fun, and I'm not going to even get into that. But some social media, and this is not an advocacy for social media, believe me, because a lot of that I just don't like. I don't like Facebook. I just never go even on my own account. There are people that go on my account more than I ever go on my account. Steve, looking great. Picture I've got up 15 years ago. Yeah, I was a lot younger then. I was on the balcony of a hotel in Hawaii. You bet I look good. I was having fun. So I don't go there much. But what we found is that in social media, individuals promote good news a lot. And, you know, Terry will bring, hey, look at this. This is really cute. Funny things, cute things, you know, that is there if you are predisposed to find that. But I interrupted myself. Human beings and human nature are drawn to stories that have a negative impact on them. It's like, you know, you can't take your eyes off of the train wreck type of attitude. You know, you don't like it, the horrible thing, and lives are lost, and it's awful. But that's why people are kind of looky-loos in driving slowly by accidents and stuff like that. You were just alerted to that. And I guess there are some researchers that have shown in various studies that the reason for that is that it's kind of like I'm doing better than they are, so that kind of in a perverse way makes me feel better. Now, that's not the scientific explanation. That's what I put onto it. But it's somehow reassuring to people if they're not suffering a plague or a famine or, you know, a car wreck. And that is why the news and the media is predisposed, even apart from the last 4 years, which is a little different, I think a lot of people would agree, to write things from a negative or pejorative perspective. So I don't really watch the local news on TV. We probably haven't watched it in a couple years, right? Just we don't watch the 10 o'clock news. We don't watch 6 o'clock news. Don't do that. But I'm sure that it's not changed that much. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15, we are given an admonition from Peter that I'd like to kind of whet your appetite for the rest of the message today. 1 Peter 3, verse, easy for me to say. 1 Peter 3 and verse 15. But sanctify, you know, set apart the Lord God in your hearts. You know, the heart is the mind, it's the seat of your emotion and your thinking. Sanctify, set apart God in your hearts, and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope. Hope. You know, if there is anything that people need today, it is hope. Now, let me frame this in such a way that brings back to some reality. You know, we got these rules that we have to go by, wearing these things in public places. You know, I'm not going to put it on. Wearing these things in public places indoors. And then now you've got people that are calling for a 3-month national mandate to wear them outside even. Oh, boy, that's rich. You know, we have been identified in this entire world as a mask-waving bunch of people. And it's kind of funny in some ways to see the extremes to which it is taken, not just in keeping good health standards of social distancing and trying not to spread a plague or whatever. And look, you want to wear a mask in here, wear a mask. You know, feel free. I mean, sometimes maybe it's good for you. Maybe it's good in many ways. I don't know. I don't see a lot of scientific evidence. I see reports on both sides. I saw a report the other day from some of the Nordic countries that they don't have enforcement of that, mandates like that, and they're in some of their countries, like Sweden, their death rate is not as high as in some of their neighboring countries. So, might be good, might be bad. If you're at risk, maybe a good thing. But there's a difference between observational studies and real scientific studies. So anyway, I'm not going to go into the where's and why's of all of that. But we have been affected by it. And it's kind of the point to where it's almost comical. It's like the guy that tried to. I think it was Mr. Walden. Steve Walden was telling me about this the other day. If it wasn't you, then it was somebody else, and I'm not giving you credit. Guy goes in to rob a bank. It used to be the only people that went into banks were bank robbers that wore masks. And plexiglass is up, right? Give me your money. Now, I got to say, sir, I'm sorry. What did you say? Empty your drawer. Give me your money. Sorry, I can't hear you. Okay, I'll take the mask off and reveal myself. Give me the money. Catched on the camera, you know, facial recognition. I don't know what happened. Did they catch the guy? I don't know. But, you know, just you got to laugh at this stuff. Okay. We are the people of God. We have to have hope. Now, I was going to say, I interrupt myself again. I wanted to frame this in one sense. Except for a run on paper goods at Costco early on in this panic, none of you have lost any weight because of this pandemic, okay? Well, I mean, you may have lost weight, but my point is this. We are not suffering in that way. People have died, okay, making no jokes about that. People have gotten ill. We've had a close friend die. Okay, I've sent out a message about that. A very dear friend of over 32 years died. She had underlying conditions. She caught this. It's not a laughing matter, okay? Don't mean to make light of that. However, the rest of us have not gone without. I mean, maybe we've gone without because we were out before, but not as a result of all of this. I mean, this is not a biblical pandemic of epic proportions. Just so we understand, this is an inconvenience. And for some people, like a lot of other illnesses and all kinds of things that can happen in life, it can end tragically in bad health and death can result. So, okay, you get that. I'm not making fun of any of that. But we are the people of God, and we are to have hope. I want to give you some hope today, and I want you to find a way to that hope. I'm going to challenge you today. Okay? It's not an ultimatum. It's kind of a, you know, a challenge. You know? And if I were to tell you you couldn't do it, then you'd be so stubborn. You say, I'll show you. It's like the end of a movie that I've talked about with my family and some of my friends that I won't go into that. But, yeah, the challenge. Challenge. But I'm going to do it in a positive way because I know you can do it. I'd like to present four simple, and when I say simple, it doesn't get any simpler than this. I'm as simple as they come. Four simple points that will change your outlook and your thinking. Now, I'm not telling you not to wear a mask. You should wear a mask if you feel you need to wear a mask, and I'm not saying it doesn't do any good, okay? But when our whole nation and world has been conditioned, even the thieves, even the bad people, even the homeless, we can't obey the Ten Commandments. We can't get in line with one of those as a group, as a world. We can't do one thing universally. But boy, oh boy, we can universally be compelled to wear a mask. That should tell us something. This, I think, from a mental health outlook, is going to be far more beneficial to you than anything a mask could do health-wise in a physical way to you. Not that that is wrong, and not that that is bad. Four simple points that I'm guaranteeing will change your outlook and thinking if you allow them to. If you allow them to. The people of God, that is our church, need to be the most enthusiastic and the most positive about the future that there are on the planet. Not the most pessimistic. And I would almost grant to you that sometimes we have been among the most pessimistic of people. I'm going to cover that and realize. But are we? Are we? Turn to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2. I believe that we need a little barometric check here of our outlook, a barometer of how we are thinking. And I'm just going to guarantee that this will change your outlook and this will change your thinking if you allow it to. Not me, your point. These points come from the Bible. Okay, I believe that the main reason, not just in the last 4 years, but forever since we've been born, that there is a determination to affect that part of your human nature and that psyche that attracts that negative outlook is because of this verse. Paul said in verse 2 of Ephesians 2, "In which you once walked according to the course of this world," hasn't changed in 6,000 years, "according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience." Now, there's a real clue there about something else that I've centered in on, and I'm just going to give you a little clue about how people can be even more affected by the prince of the power of the air. If they are the sons of disobedience, if they are predisposed to say there is no God and there is no law, they are going to be affected by the spirit more so than anybody else. And I think that you see that happening in our nation today. Maybe we are evenly divided, but the people who are fair-minded and the people who love the law and love law enforcement and support the police are people who are less affected. And you see it today in the people who are law believers. Let's put it that way. Who may be news media outlet figures themselves. They are baffled as to how can this other side think that they are right? How can they lie so blatantly? You've heard it yourself by various personalities. And even my friends and my family. How can they say that and act like they want us to believe it? Because they are the sons of disobedience. And we have been fed this for years and years and years in our educational system, that God is dead and that there's an alternate reality and that we can choose our own way. This was the whole thing about the 60s, rebellion. And it's been that way since the Garden of Eden. And sometimes it gets worse and worse, and sometimes it backs off a little bit. Paul says, "among whom we also once conducted ourselves in the lusts of the flesh." You know, before we were called, yes, this is the way mankind has generally been affected, and this is why the news can make it seem as though everything that is happening is negative. And if you don't believe in law, it's pretty simple. If you reject the law, if you reject God as authority, you're going to pick up on these vibes more. And that explains what happens to a lot of people. There's so many thoughts flooding through my mind right now, but extemporaneous thoughts. Shut that one out. Okay, I'll go with this one. Why are there nations throughout history that have been aggressor nations and today are aggressor nations? And they have no thought or remorse at doing this or that, no thought of the consequences. Why, you know, people are going to think this is a racial comment, and it really isn't, because it's so well known and it's so easily proven. And I've written about it in my newsletter a number of times. We have allowed the transfer of some of the greatest blessings that God gave to Abraham to the nation of China. Now, why have we done it? Because the people in charge have been predisposed to greed and avarice and allowing that to happen. And as a nation, that nation really does not have the moral code. And if you have a communist nation, it's not based on law, because the end getting what we want justifies the means, however we want to do it. And that's why cybercrime is so great, and that's why we've been attacked by some of these other nations who do not have the law to guide them. So I'm not saying it's necessarily their fault. They just haven't had the law, and they don't believe in the law. And that is why we're in some of this present condition that we are today. We have allowed it to happen. But for you, okay, I can't change China. And that's not our calling at this particular time. But why do we need to be the most enthusiastic and positive people on the planet? Well, we'll see. 20 years ago, standing right here, I gave a sermon. It may have been a little bit more, may have been a little less than 20 years ago. And I'd been reading a book by an Indian immigrant by the name of Dinesh D'Souza, who is an immigrant who embraced the American dream. And he basically showed how in America, some of the poorest of people live so much better than the wealthiest of people did only 100 years earlier. And it was an astounding work and an interesting way of looking at it, that I'm not talking about people that are homeless, but people that have maybe just average basic subsistence level. Maybe they live in apartments that are funded by the government or wherever you want to place that socioeconomic class. They live far better and have far better life than, quote, the millionaires of even the 19th century. You think about it. They may not drive a Mercedes-Benz, but their Yugo gets them from point A. Are there still Yugos? From, you know what I mean, though. You know what a bad car that is, right? It gets them from point A to B a lot faster than a horse used to, or a lot faster than a train did. Okay, so if you're poor and you have a car, you're living better, even if it's a bad car. You're living, unless you have to get it fixed, and then you're not so good. Anyway, but aside from that, let's just assume that the Yugo is running, and you can, the Dodge Dart? Whatever. And it gets you, you know, a horse can go like a trot, like what, 20 miles an hour, whatever, but it takes a long time. 60 miles an hour in the Dodge Dart or the Yugo gets you there faster. You can see what I mean. You see the point. So I was kind of transformed by Dinesh D'Souza's. It really gave me a positive outlook on the 21st century. And that's what he was saying. Basically, that America is poised to continue. He said, no doubt about it, the 20th century is the American century. And he says, no doubt about it, the 21st century is still going to be the American century too. And, you know, at that particular time, I gave some of his points mixed in with my own thoughts and Bible prophecy. And probably none of you who heard that sermon remember it. I barely remember it, but it was 20 years ago. But the point of it was that the 21st century was shaping up to be one of the best of times in America. Guess what? It has been. I'm reminded of a deacon, late 1980s, probably at a Bible study that I was conducting in the middle of South Dakota, and really good guy. After the conclusion of Bible study, we were talking about it. It was during the Reagan years, towards the end of the Reagan years. And Dick Dom said to me, he says, you know, he says, we're going to look back on the 1980s, and we're going to say that was a great time for America. And he was right. But, you know, fighting all of that in the back of my mind and even fighting the thought that better days might lie ahead in 1999 and the year 2000 for America is the thought that many of us have had about the impending gloom and doom in the future. I grew up in the 1960s. My mother subscribed to the New Yorker magazine, which I didn't realize at the time, a very liberal magazine even back then, but they'd have cartoons that were, you know, kind of funny, and one that they'd run every so often was, you know, the bearded prophet on the street of New York in a robe and sandals holding the sign, "The end is near," with some caption that was funny on it. And basically, we've almost, in the Church of God, we've almost been programmed to think in that way. Doom, gloom, prophecy bad, bad things coming, things are going to get worse. And yeah, they will. But 20 years ago, kind of the thinking of somebody outside of the Bible kind of transformed me into wondering, isn't that a possibility? And it really was very, very helpful to have a positive outlook. And I'm going to tell you now that even if the outcome had not been as good, it still would have been good for me to have that. And I'm going to prove it from the Bible today. I think at the time there may have been, Buchanan. He's a little positive outlook sermon. What's he thinking here? I'm going to tell you this. We ought to be the most positive about everything, despite any doom and gloom that may be on the horizon, but we're predisposed to the future being bleak. I believe it's a theory that I have. It's a premise that I have. Probably because we have said that so much within the Church of God community. Agree or disagree. Now, there is plenty of information in the Bible that leads to some pretty drastic conclusions. Evil men getting worse and worse, and yeah, that's happening. And sure, bad things happen a lot in the world. And some of these prophecies are indeed coming to pass slowly, gradually, and we've always known that. But the problem is, if you don't have the right type of thinking along the way, you may miss out on some things that are actually good for you and that are good outcomes and good things happening. I believe that sometimes we've been conditioned to think like this. Things are only going to get worse. They can't get any better. Pretty simple premise. Agree or disagree, okay? But here is the point. While we in the Church of God have been looking for the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, the way the news is written to appeal to whatever it is in our minds that targets the negativity quotient. I just made that one up myself. NQ. NQ, remember it. It's going to become household soon. The negativity quotient. Whatever it is that targets our own negativity quotient, whatever has a negative outcome forecast in the Bible seems like it is being fulfilled, and maybe it is. But that doesn't mean that we have to have our negativity quotient targeted as much as somebody that doesn't know any better at all. And the danger to all of that is several fold, which I'll get into. But I want to give you point number one. Point number one. We may be missing the blessings along the way or overlooking them. We may miss the blessings along the way or overlook them. Maybe you'll be a recipient of the blessings, but you may overlook them. And I believe that that's a bad thing, and that's a dangerous thing. Don't miss the blessings along the way. Now, tell you a little story. Tracy Lawrence is one of my favorite country music singers. Okay, just for a show of hands, those of you that are out in cyberland, you can raise your hands too. How many of you, there's three answers, positive, neutral, don't like. How many of you like country music, generally speaking? How many of you, okay? Like almost everybody. No, it's not. How many of you are neutral? Neutral, okay. How many of you just don't like it? Be brave now if you don't like it. You don't like it, okay. Well, here's one you're going to like. We've seen Tracy Lawrence twice in concert down at Desert Diamond, you know, the standing room, you know, you can get up close and you can see the artist. He's good. He's got some good hits. He's got some good songs, but this is one he doesn't sing because it's on one of his other albums. I don't think it was a number one hit or anything. It's called As Easy As Our Blessings, and I'm just going to read the lyrics to you. I think it's really a terrific, terrific hymn, terrific song, rather. He says, "Lately I've been having more nights that I can't sleep. Storms of life keep blowing in. Sometimes it gets so heavy, It drives me to my knees. And it's coming down again. Then a voice inside reminds me of the roof over my head. And my wife and kids are tucked away warmly in their beds. And up in heaven, sometimes I wonder if God sits there to all his children thinking, it'd be nice if we forget our troubles as easy as our blessings. And suddenly I don't feel like counting what I need, so I start counting what I have. When times are at their toughest, my wife still stands by me, and my children make me laugh. Then I crawl back into bed and start to think as I lay there, could it be that he's already heard and answered all my prayers? Well, I'm not sure how many of you will look up that song and listen to it, but you should. I dare you to. He can't tell me what to do. When I gave my sermon 20 years ago, I had to face some difficult realities. Some of you knew, some of you knew about it. Some of you really didn't. I tried not to play into that very much. Some of you know the story a bit, but you don't know how changes in the Church of God 20 years ago affected our family personally. Maybe a little over 20 years ago. And I truly believe, and I'm not going to get into the details, but I truly believe it was the way we thought about and reacted to things that got us through. Life-changing can be the way you think. And the encouragement from that way of thinking was the way we thought about life. Combination of the Bible, some tough love thinking from my upbringing, from my dad. The world doesn't owe you a living. No, we don't own the electric company. Turn that thermostat down. The way we thought helped us take advantage of the blessings God has bestowed on this country. And instead of looking at what we lost, we focused on what we had and what we could have. And I'm here to say that Dinesh D'Souza was right, that at least from the beginning of the 21st century, because of a different way of thinking, we were able to take advantage of the blessings in this nation. It wouldn't have been possible without that. So, did I give you point number one?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll have 5 points today. Who knows? Whatever point this is, it's next. Change your thinking. Proverbs 15 and verse 13. It's a declarative statement, but you know, like I said, it's simple. Change your thinking, and it can be done. It can be done. A couple little simple verses here. Change your thinking. Proverbs 15 and verse 13. You'll have to ask yourself the question about this particular verse. And I really know, after knowing this congregation for so long, I know that some of you are this way. I don't know all of you all that well, but I know some of you are this way because I know how you've handled some adversity in your life. Proverbs 15:13, a merry heart makes a cheerful countenance. Merry heart makes a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. Are you merry? Are you happy? Do you take time out to be happy? Now, this is not from the Bible, but many years ago when I was a kid, I read some biographies of Teddy Roosevelt. And, you know, he grew up in what we would call kind of a family that was privileged, but traveled all over the world. But as a little boy, he noticed that things would frighten him. And he actually became, in the Spanish-American War, one of the bravest people ever. And you've heard about him charging up San Juan Hill and fighting bullets and taking bullets and all that sort of thing. It began when he was very young. He told himself to act brave. And by thinking those thoughts of bravery, he became brave. Now that sounds crazy, right? The old 20th century lift yourself up by the bootstraps type of thinking. It worked. It worked. He was a great leader, a great person. The more a man thinks in a certain way, the more he becomes that way. So be merry. Now, don't be a goofball, right? But turn a few pages over. Proverbs 16, verse 24. Here's another way to change your thinking. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. Be pleasant, be merry, be happy to others. Your words can be very important, can be very influential, can be very helpful if spoken in the right way. And it may take special effort to come up with the best and the most positive way to frame things. Be that person. Be that merry person, because you, as the people of God, have a responsibility to others. Back a few chapters, Proverbs 12 and verse 25. These are sprinkled in the book of Proverbs throughout, little gems. We had a little assignment earlier in the year studying the book of Proverbs. A lot of you did it. A lot of you went through it. You found these little things. All of a sudden, boom, pops out on the page. Proverbs 12 and verse 25. Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. Take action. Mark Twain is the one that said, I'm paraphrasing him, don't worry, be proactive. Do something about your situation if you're feeling this way, if there's anxiety. Do something. Don't be inactive, but do something proactive. He said, most of the tragedies I've had in my life never happened. They were anxieties that were never realized because he became proactive and did something about them. You can cheer up others as well. Good words. Proverbs 18, verse 21. Proverbs 18, verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. You know, there's a reciprocal relationship here in the way that we speak to others and what we get back in return. So think about that. Change your thinking. Make sure your thinking affects others in a positive way. Point number two or three, whatever you want. I don't know if I... Okay, three. Go for three, yeah. A five-point sermon, I guess those are still acceptable, right? Go to war with your thoughts. Go to war with your thoughts. Now, one of Terry's favorite movies that she has on her iPad is the old Disney movie. Had to be old to be any good, right? Brian was telling us last week, Stephen, you'd like Brian in El Paso. You know, Disney ruined the Star Wars franchise. They ruined the Marvel franchise. Okay, so it had to be an old Disney movie. Pollyanna is an old Disney movie, and people speak disparagingly about people that have a Pollyanna attitude, right? Where'd that come from? That came from the movie Pollyanna. And although I think the movie kind of, you know, slips a little bit at the end and the conclusion, you still get the point that this little girl whose parents have just died, and they don't tell you why. She comes to live with her aunt, and she transforms the whole community that she's living in, even when she falls out of a tree and breaks her leg and, you know, is paralyzed. Not a good thing. Wait a minute. Why is this movie so good? Okay. Pollyanna attitude comes from this movie because whenever anybody in the movie, her aunt or some of the people that she's living with in this big, huge house, if they're ever negative, she poses a question and it makes them reflect. It makes them reflect on something that she said. So she incorporates the previous point too, but she makes people think. Haley Mills, one of her best roles is a little kid. And a Pollyanna attitude is meant to be a bad thing, but I'm thinking you probably should have a Pollyanna attitude if you're going to be like Haley Mills in this movie that brings a whole community together. And when she's put on the train and taken to the hospital in Baltimore, the whole town is waving and wishing her well. I spoiled it, didn't I, for you that haven't seen it? Okay. Go to war with your thoughts, because it's always better to be a Pollyanna than a negative Nelly. Always better. And the old Disney movie is a lot better than some of the movies that feature gritty human realism. Okay. So how do you do that? How do you do that? 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 5. If you think this point doesn't come from the Bible, you're wrong. It comes from the Bible. Go to war with your thoughts. And your thoughts are battling you all the time. But they're always battling. We have this battle that's going on in our heads constantly. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 5. Paul mentions in verse 4, the weapons of our warfare are not physical. We've got something else in the armamentarium of our spiritual life, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. The strongholds are us. It's like the old cartoon. I've seen the enemy and it's us. We are our own worst enemies in this regard, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. That is your job. That is your challenge. That is what all of us must do. Go to war. That's where the battle is, in our heads. Now, several weeks ago, I gave a very simple sermonette focused on Philippians 4 and verse 8. One scripture packed with a lot of information, and I gave you an assignment. I told you to do it. Whatsoever things are pure, honest, lovely. You know, I don't know how many of you did it. And you probably rebelled. Since I told you to do it, you probably said, I'll show him. I'm not going to do that. This will transform your mind, because what you put into your mind is what you begin to think. It's kind of like the old Teddy Roosevelt attitude, but in a spiritual way. So I'll challenge you once again. Make this a memory verse. Meditate, think on these things as a Christian. It will transform your life if you allow it to. So that assignment is there for you. Do it. I mean, nobody looking over your shoulder. We've got the visiting crew that will be checking up on you here in the next couple of weeks. Mr. Tannert, Mr. Horchak, and I will be out there assessing your progress. No, we won't. So do that. And then Colossians chapter 3. Another little tip, a gem. And as we approach the fall holy days, a lot of opportunity for this. We'll try to fill your minds with some of the good things that are going to happen in the future. Chapter 3 and verse 1, if then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. That is the government of God. That is where God the Father and Jesus Christ are sitting there. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. Those things are above, they're worth attaining for. They will be a part of your reality. Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 23. Pretty simple. Ephesians 4, 23. And be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. Change your thinking. It's an incredible, incredible, powerful tool. Incredible tool. Paul said in Romans 12 and verse 2, I really believe that when it came down to it, the simplest explanation for what happened in 1995 with the Great Divide, and I mean this sincerely as a compliment to all of you and all of you who are part of that whole process, I really believe that this is what it boiled down to. I think it was a matter of conforming versus transforming. There's no time in which we shouldn't be transformed, however. But I think people conformed for various reasons, but their lives were not transformed for whatever reason. God will sort it out sometime. We have great hopes for all of that. But in verse 2 it says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Because if you're not transformed by it, there's no way you're going to prove it. There's no way you're going to be in a continual habit forever of proving it to be good. Some people may not have proven that it was good. Point 3-4. Surround yourself with positivity. Surround yourself with positivity. Okay, I'm at the risk of sounding like a motivational speaker, but it's true. It's from the Bible. Psalm 19. Psalm 19:14. David said, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Now, David was hopeful that what he said and what he thought would be something that would find favor in God's sight. And he began the psalm by reflecting on the heavens. And what those heavens really show us are this incredible and unbelievable Creator God. The heavens declare the glory of God. They tell us how great God is. There's nothing more majestic than the family of God. This is what he created. David didn't worship it. He didn't focus on it. He focused on God that created it. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There's no speech nor language where their voice is heard. Their line has gone out to the earth, their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tabernacle for the sun, which is like a bridegroom coming out of its chamber, and rejoices like a strong man to run its race. Think of these words. I get up in the morning, most days. I'm out in dark, walking in a boring walk around the neighborhood, 4.5 miles, seeing the same scenery. They won't let me out of the gate, so I stay within the confines. But I look up at that time of the day, and it's dark, and there's a night, and then there's a, sometimes the other few weeks ago, there was a full moon, and you can see a few of the stars. It's getting light, and then the sun comes out, and it's just like, it's so marvelous that that's all in its course. And God created that to show us Him. Not what we could be, but what God is. And then David goes in, the law, verse 7, the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. Verse 12, who can understand his errors? Cleanse me from secret faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. It's a positive affirmation of who and what God is and what He has created, and He has allowed us to understand it. In Romans chapter 8 and verse 26, I think a favorite topic, favorite passage for many, there is all the stuff that's going on in the world, all the negativity. But God's Spirit is there for you. And it says in verse 26, likewise, the Spirit also helps in our weakness. For we do not know what we should pray for as we ought. But the Spirit itself makes intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. Now he who searches the hearts knows what the mind of the Spirit is, because it makes intercession for the saints according to the will of God. So even if your utterings to God are not perfect, God knows your heart. The Spirit of God makes very clear the truth that you're concerned. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to His purpose. Very comforting words. I haven't always done this properly for sure, but I'm going to get better. How about you? Yeah, you will too. Last point. Whatever it is. Smile and laugh. Now, the next point is not in the Bible. You're not going to find this encouragement in the Bible, okay? But something that Terry and I do from time to time. Technology is great in some respects, and you don't have to like this, but find whatever you like. And it doesn't even have to be of modern entertainment or anything, but whatever makes you smile and makes you laugh, makes you happy. You know, if it's something that brings joy to your heart and it's good and right in God's sight, then go for it. But I was reflecting as I was preparing the sermon. A few times we've just tuned into some of the old Johnny Carson shows on YouTube. You can find some of those. Sometimes they're just snippets. And they've got all the greats. What a great show that was. Had a lot of great entertainment. It was a bygone era now. I never thought I'd... I remember my dad speaking of, you know, era he was barely associated with, or probably could barely remember the vaudeville area. And we had an uncle, my dad's uncle. We had a great uncle. My dad's uncle, Uncle Huey, would come visit, and he was kind of like a vaudeville type of personality. And he'd have a cigar, and he'd be smoking it in the house. You know, he basically chewed on it, but he basically you could mention almost any topic, and he'd break out into some vaudeville song. It was so hilarious. But it was a happy time for him. He's a funny guy. But seeing Bob Hope, Jack Benny, Frank Sinatra, Don Rickles, and a host of other stars, Dean Martin, made us laugh. And just, you know, every so often you need that. And it may not be modern entertainment or ancient entertainment. You're not going to find that in the Bible, but what you will find in Proverbs 17 and verse 22... Yeah, I'm not saying every entertainment thing that's even going to make you laugh is going to be necessarily the greatest thing. You have to sort that out for yourself. You know, I'm not proclaiming that all modern entertainment is great, okay? But Proverbs 17 and verse 22 says, a merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. You see the contrast there. Whatever makes you cheerful and happy, focus on that. It may be your grandkids, right? It may be the smile of a little baby that is innocent that makes you happy and reflect on the greatness of God. And I can see by your reaction that you feel the same way. You see, we want to be encouraged by good things. All human beings really do. We are, by our human nature, we are predisposed to have that negativity quotient alerted at times. There's not much you can do about that, but we are different. And we need to act differently with the instruction from the Bible. And I'm going to prove to you that people do want to hear good news, even from times past. I would look forward every noonday and sometimes in the mornings, because the show was repeated several times during the day, to hear Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey, not just the rest of the story, that was a different show. But Paul Harvey had a news show, and every day in his Chicago office, I think it was WLS, he would arrive and he would grab the news off the teletype as it came in from around the world. There's just static reports. And he would write his own copy every day, and he would write a glowing report, and he would, unlike many of the newscasters of his day, he would write things from a positive point of view. He covered it all. And he was probably the greatest of radio broadcasters ever. And people changed their schedule to listen to him because they craved that. Everybody did. I know I did, but everybody else did too. It was a daily ritual. Positivity attracts people. It attracts people to you. Be that kind of person. Good day. It's not the end of the sermon. Ronald Reagan had 5-minute radio broadcasts during the 70s as he was preparing eventually for the presidency, sponsored by, what was it, the borax team of mules and whatever, what they call that? 20 mule team, yeah. By whom? Borax. What is borax anyway? Anyway, some kind of chemical. Anyway, people loved it. He gave hope with insightful analysis, and that's why he was so successful as a president. Because people were drawn to that hope. They were drawn to that positivity. They loved it. Now, what will the next 20 years hold? Will Jesus return? Will our nation remain a bastion of blessings? I was watching a video that Brother Hugh made. It was really incredible. I think we could play it for the sermonette time one day here, kind of recounting the blessings, the history of the blessings of Abraham. How many of you would be interested in seeing that? Oh, Hugh, getting a lot of hands. Okay. They like you, Hugh. We'll do that. We'll fit it into the schedule. But he goes through some of that thing. What will the next 20 years hold? I don't know. I have no clue. In 1981, an author by the name of Paul Erdman wrote a novel called The Last Days of America. This is 1981. I bought the book. I read it. It's a novel. It didn't happen, by the way. But it was a novel, and it was interesting from this standpoint. It was written predicting the demise of the United States in 1985. It was a bestseller, and it involved international intrigue, political subterfuge. No, we don't have any of that today. Conspiracy in government, conspiracy among Swiss bankers and the German government, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It didn't happen. It was 1985. I think some church members read it, and, oh, wow, there's got a lot of insight in it. Well, none of it came true. In 1992, a few years later, while I was here in Tucson, Arizona, a University of Arizona professor of economics wrote a best-selling book called Bankruptcy 1995. This book, which was a huge bestseller from a local author, solemnly predicted in 1992 that in 3 years, the United States would suffer the kind of hyperinflation suffered by Germany in the 1920s. People would be going to the store with wheelbarrows full of $100 bills to buy a loaf of bread, right? And would be totally and completely destitute as a nation. How long ago was that? It was a long time ago. Well, secular predictions oftentimes can appeal even to those of us in the church. I guess that's why I bought the book. What a waste $15 was. It didn't happen. You know what did really happen? It was during that time that Newt Gingrich became the Speaker of the House. The Republicans had a majority in the House, and they had so much money coming into the Treasury, they had to give a tax rebate to people, so the nation didn't go downhill. But now it's going to go downhill because we've done so much deficit spending. Okay, all that stuff. Secular predictions at one point will come true. That's why I like Rush so much. He's positive, but he says, you know, all of these people that are doom and gloomers, the thing that they got going on their side is that eventually they're going to be right. Eventually, yeah, I mean, we know that. We in the church know that more than that. But how much good will you miss out if you don't have the implementation of these biblical precepts in your life? A lot, I would say. I believe that it got me through some tough times for me and my family personally. William Safire was one of my mother's favorite writers and columnists. He had a weekly column. I think he wrote for either the New York Times or Washington Post. He was brilliant. It was back when you could be a conservative and actually write for the New York Times. He wrote incredible volumes of stuff. He was brilliant. But his short phrase that was a part of a speech that he wrote for a politician is the most well-known pieces of all of the brilliant work that he ever wrote, and it still resonates today. And since he wrote this speech for a former Maryland politician, I decided to use it in the conclusion today. Spiro Agnew, who was at that time the Vice President of the United States, in speaking of the press of his day, and it applies today, and this resonates today, and the most famous thing of all the things that William Safire wrote, in the United States today, we have more than our share of nattering nabobs of negativism. To you and the Church of God, block out the nattering nabobs of negativity by changing your thoughts. Go to war with your thoughts. Surround yourself with positivity and smile and laugh when appropriate. And in so doing, you'll be able to see clearly what is really happening, well, not what someone else wants you to believe and think.